As the U.S. Israeli genocidal war on Gaza continues for the 162nd day, a new airstrike on a refugee camp kills at least 36 Palestinians. Israel's Netanyahu rejects Hamas's new ceasefire proposal, pressing on with plans to invade Gaza's southern city of Rafah. And Palestine's Islamic Jihad deputy leader slams a U.S. offering of limited aid to Gaza while delivering unlimited lethal weapons to Israel. Dozens more Palestinians are killed as the Israeli regime continues ahead with its genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip, now in its 162nd day. In the latest airstrikes, the Israeli military has targeted Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, leaving at least 36 people dead. Many people were also killed or injured in yet another bombing on the southern city of Rafah, which once Israel designated as safe for displaced Palestinians. Rafah has been targeted frequently amid the regime's threat that it will conduct a ground operation there soon. Now, since onset of Israel's campaign of genocide in early October, nearly 31,500 Gazans have been killed, most of them women and children. Our correspondent joined us earlier from a central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala to update us on the situation in the besieged Palestinian territory.
Actually, the Israeli massacres were continued and were continued over the last night as the swinging Israeli attacks continued and maintained over several areas of Gaza Strip, from Beit Hanun city in the north to Rafah city in the south. Continuous Israeli airstrikes harvested more lives of the Palestinian civilians. Now, let's begin from the central area of Gaza Strip, as the Israeli occupation warplanes carried out several Israeli airstrikes against the residential buildings. At least four residential buildings were destroyed in the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. At least 37 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed in Al-Nusayrat after the Israeli occupation forces targeted a residential building in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. The scene in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, the people are gathering to mourn those people and to take these dead bodies to their last destination after the Israeli occupation forces mercilessly massacred them while they were inside their houses. These are the dead bodies of those Palestinian civilians, including the women, children, and elderly. They were massacred over the last night in Al-Nusayrat and Deir al-Balah city. So it's the same scene, it's the same crime reiterated on a daily basis by the Israeli occupation forces. So it's another crime added to the continuous record and continuous Israeli crime.
Israel's prime minister has rejected a new ceasefire proposal by the Hamas resistance movement that includes release of regime's captives in exchange for the release of Palestinian abductees. Benjamin Netanyahu's office issued a statement following a war cabinet meeting in Tel Aviv. However, the statement said a delegation will leave for Qatar to discuss Israel's position on a potential agreement. It also said Netanyahu would approve plans for military operation in Rafah, the southern Gaza city where more than a million people are sheltering. Earlier, Hamas said under its proposal, the occupying forces have to leave Gaza. Hamas said its proposal also includes the return of displaced Palestinians to their homes, provided with aid. The exchange of Palestinian abductees with Israeli captives held in Gaza was included as well. Israel's genocidal war has cast a somber tone over this year's holy month of Ramadan in the besieged Gaza Strip. Palestinians there are in dire need of food, grappling with devastating impacts of unrelenting Israeli bombardment and a crippling siege. Our correspondent in Gaza, Muti Abu Musabe, has spoken to some displaced Gazans who described their plight.
I was displaced after the Israeli forces attacked our neighborhood. As you can see, we live in these tents made of plastic and fabric. We have nothing to eat but some canned food, which is the only thing that we have been eating for roughly 6 months. We don't even have gas to cook. I have six children and I don't know what to feed them.
I have been displaced from the Nusayrat refugee camp. I have 5 children. I came from Algeria to visit Gaza and then the war erupted. I hadn't expected that the situation could be as bad as it is. The situation is beyond catastrophic here as people can barely find food, especially in this holy month of Ramadan.
This Ramadan is completely different from previous years. My 5 kids and I have been displaced from Gaza City while my husband is still there. We have no source of food. The amount of food provided by charities is also scarce. We're devastated and deprived of our basic needs.
I live here with my 8 children. Our lives are tragic. The situation is getting worse day by day. We're struggling to cope with this unbearable condition amid the relentless bombardment and bloodshed. In Ramadan, we are completely relying on the food provided by donors. Sometimes the food is scarce and we get nothing to eat. Eating canned food has also made us sick.
We have been displaced from northern Gaza. There are 7 of us living here. We are suffering a lot. The weather is too cold and there are no gas supplies. Because of that, I have to make a fire to cook food. Most of the time, we find no food or milk for the children. They always cry and get sick. The Israeli war has destroyed everything in Gaza.
A representative of the United Nations Population Fund for Palestine has expressed deep concern about the situation of newborns in Gaza amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught.
I'm personally leaving Gaza this week, terrified for the 1 million women and girls of Gaza, 650,000 of reproductive age, of menstruating age, and most especially for the 180 women who are giving birth every single day in Gaza. We need to have unfettered access, safe, at scale, with multiple entry points. So there's a lot more conditions on the ground that would need to be provided to ensure that the assistance can get to where it's most needed.
Allen warned on Friday the humanitarian situation in Gaza is a nightmare for mothers and babies, with doctors reporting abnormal size and sick newborns. He said doctors also point to tragic situation related to stillborn births and neonatal deaths caused by malnutrition, dehydration, and complications. He also said numbers of complicated deliveries are roughly twice as mothers are stressed, fearful, underfed, and exhausted, and caregivers often lack necessary supplies. Allen described the situation in Gaza as a crisis of humanity and beyond catastrophic, adding those children should be wrapped in their mother's arms, not in body bags. Israel's genocidal war has so far killed 31,500 civilians, most of them women and children. Now, we held an exclusive interview with a deputy leader of Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement. In it, he details the latest ceasefire plan proposed by resistance in Gaza, but cast doubt over Israeli willingness to reach a political settlement.
A new proposal was submitted, which divides the agreement, meaning that the first phase would begin, which includes the prisoner swap, and we agreed to add other elements to it, which would include a withdrawal from the Rashid Street and the Salah ad-Din Square, which would allow for the return or guarantee the return of the displaced to their homes in the north of the Gaza Strip and Gaza City. The second phase, which includes the swap of the soldiers, which must include guarantees for an end of the war, an end to the aggression, and an end to the ceasefire. And the third phase would include pledges to begin the reconstruction of Gaza. We believe that the Israeli government, because it includes a number of members of the far right, will not respond, and it has maneuvered. There is maneuvering on the part of a Netanyahu government.
Hindi, however, said such Israeli maneuvering will not lead anywhere because of Palestinian steadfastness. He said resistance is carrying out operations in areas which Israel claims to have captured, including in the north of the Strip and in Khan Yunis to the south. The resistance official also highlighted U.S. complicity in Israel's campaign of genocide.
In this aggression, there is American agreement with Israel. And the American administration is a complete accomplice with Israel, despite the crocodile tears which they are shedding. So the goals are to eliminate the resistance, and these are American-Israeli joint strategic goals. So the goals are the same, but there is a disagreement regarding the priorities. The Americans talk, for example, about sparing civilians, but the civilians are being killed with American weapons and bombs. And some of these weapons reach Israel even behind the back of the Congress.
Hindi described as an act of hypocrisy, U.S. delivery of limited aid to Gaza through airdrops and a so-called temporary seaport while delivering weapons to Israel. He said U.S. is attempting to mislead international conscience and to buy time for the Israeli regime. Hindi also pointed to Israeli threats to invade refugee-packed city of Rafah, describing them as meaningless given the large extent of Israeli losses and casualties elsewhere in Gaza, which he stressed the regime is concealing. Political analyst Saeed Shabi joined us earlier and told us about two major failures of Israel since its creation, despite committing all sorts of crimes and atrocities.
There are a few points here. Number one, Israel, after 75 years of occupation, has not secured its own security. For 75 years, there have been only wars, crimes, genocidal policies. They have been repeatedly criticized by international bodies. So on the security front, they have failed to achieve their own security, despite what is said about their sophisticated security systems and sophisticated military hardware. They have failed. This is number one. Number two, when they waged the war on Hamas and on Palestinians in the last 4 months since October the 9th, when they started their operations against the Palestinians, they declared and they said that our aim is to destroy and demolish the resistance movements, especially Hamas. But now, after 4 months or five, almost 5 months, they have failed to do it. They have not been able to defeat the resistance movement. And this is what happened in the last, as I said, 75 years. They have never been able to defeat the resistance movement. On the other hand, they have been bombing the citizens, the ordinary civilians in Gaza, sometimes in Jerusalem.
Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds witnessed a record number of worshippers on Friday, Tawfer evening, and special Tarawih prayers in the holy month of Ramadan. According to Palestinian media, some 90,000 worshippers gathered at Islam's third holiest place on Friday evening, largest in the past several months. That despite regime's restrictions on Palestinians' access to the Al-Aqsa amid growing tensions over the genocidal war on Gaza and increased violence in the West Bank. Reports say Israel's beefed up forces around the mosque and prevented hundreds from entering there. And still, around 80,000 people performed the first Friday prayer of Ramadan. Mosque has frequently been a flashpoint for violence, often sparked by storming of the complex by Israeli settlers under protection of troops. Ramadan celebrations and decorations have been minimized throughout the old city in Al-Quds as the Gaza war casts a shadow over the festive period. Thousands of Yemenis have once again taken to the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities, demonstrating their staunch support for Palestinians in Gaza. They also held military operations of Yemen's armed forces against Israeli-linked vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Following Friday prayers, thousands of Yemenis in the capital Sana'a and across several other cities took part in demonstrations to express their unwavering support for the Palestinians in Gaza. They praised the Yemeni army's escalation of naval operations targeting Israeli-linked ships in the Indian Ocean. The protesters also voiced their opposition to Israel's policies, which have led to the starvation and death of water-stricken Palestinians in Gaza.
Mr. Abdul Malik's announcement was clear. If the Israeli escalation in Gaza and killing of Palestinians continue, Yemen will also carry on with targeting Israeli-bound ships, preventing them from sailing even in the Indian Ocean and Cape of Good Hope.
The escalation of naval operations is a step previously promised by Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi. I believe that it is only a preliminary step and there will be upcoming surprises because Mr. Abdul Malik did not disclose more details, and we all know that these operations are in support of our brothers in Gaza.
Yemeni army spokesman Yahya Saria also addressed the demonstrators, detailing the country's latest naval operations in the Red Sea.
With God's help, the naval forces of the Yemeni army carried out an operation targeting the Israeli ship Pacific 01 in the Red Sea with a number of suitable naval missiles. Our forces also carried out an operation targeting an American destroyer in the Red Sea with a number of drones and successfully achieved its objectives. Thanks to God, we began to expand the scope of our operations against Israeli ships and those linked to Israel to include the Indian Ocean to the Cape of Good Hope.
Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, had previously pledged to expand the scope of Yemen's naval operations. He declared that the Yemeni army would henceforth prevent Israeli-bound ships from passing through the Indian Ocean. Al-Houthi further mentioned that the Yemeni army had carried out 12 operations using 58 missiles and drones last week, three of which took place in the Indian Ocean.
People here vowed that they will continue to stand in support of the people of Palestine in the wake of Israel's genocide in Gaza. They believe that all free people worldwide should unite and stand against Israel and its supporters. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Zionist regime has seriously hindered the work of humanitarian agencies by blocking aid, targeting and killing humanitarian workers, destroying Palestinian food production, and cutting off Gaza's north, reducing Palestinians there to eating animal feed, bird seed, and leaves, unfit for human consumption. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, The Zionist regime's genocidal campaign in Gaza has entered its 6 months with around 31,000 Palestinian fatalities recorded since October 7th and no ceasefire on the horizon at the start of Ramadan. At least 25 Palestinians have been starved to death in Gaza due to the Zionist regime's engineered famine, among them 18 children. The children include a baby girl and a 10-year-old boy with cerebral palsy, according to the health ministry in Gaza. According to Defense for Children International Palestine, the true death toll due to starvation is feared to be much higher, as many Palestinians, particularly in northern Gaza, face famine and are almost entirely cut off from the limited humanitarian aid entering Gaza through the southern Rafah crossing. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vows to invade Rafah, where more than 1 million displaced people are concentrated along the border with Egypt. Israel bombed one of the largest residential high-rises in Rafah early on Saturday, March 9th, displacing dozens of families and raising fears that a ground invasion in the area may be imminent. The UN Human Rights Office said recently, any ground assault on Rafah would incur massive loss of life and would heighten the risk of further atrocity crimes. This must not be allowed to happen. Recently, South Africa filed its latest application to the International Court of Justice, urging the principal judicial organ of the United Nations to issue additional and amended provisional measures in light of new facts in its genocide complaint against the Zionist regime. The court declined to issue additional provisional measures after an application made by South Africa in mid-February, the judges stating that the perilous situation demands immediate and effective implementation of the provisional measures indicated by the court in its order of January 26th. In its application last week, South Africa states that the situation then perilous is now so terrifying as to be unspeakable, as described by United Nations humanitarian chiefs, justifying and indeed demanding the indication of further provisional measures of protection. South Africa called for a response to the Zionist regime's continuing violations and contempt for the court's interim ruling issued in late January, which found that the Zionist regime was plausibly carrying out a genocide in Gaza and ordered it to halt all genocidal acts. The provisional measures specifically order the Zionist regime to stop killing or causing serious bodily or mental harm to Palestinians in Gaza, prevent and punish incitement to commit genocide, take immediate and effective measures to enable basic services and humanitarian assistance and prevent the destruction of and ensure the preservation of evidence. The court also ordered the Zionist regime to submit a report to the tribunal on its compliance with the provisional measures within 1 month. South Africa argues in its latest application, the extreme gravity of the situation facing Palestinian men, women, children and babies, and the existential risk of the Palestinian people in Gaza as part of the Palestinian national or ethnic group face as a result of Israel's genocidal military campaign demands further action by the court. South Africa compares its intervention with a similar one made by Bosnia in 1993, in which the tribunal was told that this will be the last opportunity that this court shall have to save both the people and the state of Bosnia and Herzegovina from extermination and annihilation by means of genocide. God will record your response to our request for the rest of eternity. It states, South Africa fears that this application may be the last opportunity that this court shall have to save the Palestinian people in Gaza, already dying of starvation and now one step from famine. In the Bosnia case, the court declined to order additional provisional measures. In the 2 years that followed, South Africa states approximately 7,336 Bosnians in the so-called safe area of Srebrenica had been slaughtered in what this court retrospectively determined to have a genocide. The cost in human lives will likely be even higher in Gaza should the status quo persist. Since the court's preliminary ruling was made on January 26, the Zionist regime killed around 4,550 Palestinians and wounded more than 7,550, bringing the grim totals to 30,631 killed and 72,043 injured, South Africa states in its application. Israel has not changed its conduct materially or at all pursuant to the order. It has instead doubled down on its genocidal aims and acts and thus shown its contempt for the court. South Africa adds, noting that senior Israeli officials have poured the scorn on the court and its order. South Africa requests in its application that the court order an immediate halt to all fighting and hostilities and demand that all hostages and detainees be released immediately. South Africa also calls for a provisional measure ordering parties to the Genocide Convention to comply with their obligations. It also asks the court to make more specific calls in regard to its earlier order on the Zionist regime to take immediate and effective measures to ensure the provision of basic services and humanitarian assistance to Palestinians in Gaza. In its application, South Africa identifies new facts and changes in the situation in Gaza, including the starvation death of children, predicting that they will increase exponentially and not linearly in the absence of a cessation of military activities and a lifting of the blockade. South Africa also notes that the Zionist regime's deliberate attempts to shut down the work of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, on whom the vast majority of besieged, displaced, and starving Palestinian men, women, and children and babies depend for their survival. The Zionist regime has also seriously hindered the work of humanitarian agencies by blocking aid, targeting and killing humanitarian workers, destroying Palestinian food production and cutting off Gaza's north, reducing Palestinians there to eating animal feed, bird seed and leaves unfit for human consumption. South Africa also observes that Israel has attacked crowds of desperate Palestinians attempting to access humanitarian aid, including the flour massacre of 118 people gathered for food assistance on February 29th. Palestinian civil society groups have meanwhile catalogued myriad Israeli violations since the International Court of Justice's January 26 interim ruling. This includes the Zionist regime's forces killing 14 journalists as of March 5th, four slain on the same day, as well as two lawyers working for the Palestinian Center for Human Rights who lost their lives in separate strikes on residential buildings, their families killed alongside them. In another of the deadliest attacks during the last 5 months, the Zionist regime warplanes and warships repeatedly struck Rafah in southern Gaza on February 17th, killing 83 Palestinians, including 27 children, amongst them displaced Palestinians who were sleeping in their tents, according to the Palestinian human rights and advocacy groups. Days earlier, Israeli regime troops ordered a Palestinian detainee, Jamal al-Din Mohammed Abu Ola, to enter Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis while handcuffed to tell those inside to evacuate. According to the Palestinian groups, as he was walking outside the hospital, still inside the gates, he was killed by an Israeli soldier in front of his mother. The Palestinian Ministry of Health reported that Israeli snipers killed another three Palestinians at the hospital on the same day.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip continues with unflinching support from the U.S. Massive aerial and artillery strikes keep pounding neighborhoods, homes, refugee camps, while civilians trying to receive aid have turned into new targets for Israeli forces. Hamas resistance movement has presented a new ceasefire proposal, but the warmongers in the Israeli cabinet have once again rejected the idea of peace by approving a plan for a ground invasion of Rafah in the southern Gaza Strip. Now, what is left of the credibility of international bodies like the UN, which have been unable to put an end to what is believed to be the most tragic chapter of modern history unfolding before our very eyes in the besieged Gaza Strip? Our guests for tonight's Spotlight are journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, joining us from Brussels. And we also have attorney, activist, and political analyst Zakir Ahmad Maia, joining us from Johannesburg.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Magni in Brussels. Israel's prime minister, as we just mentioned, has rejected a new ceasefire proposal by the Hamas resistance movement that included the release of the regime's captives in exchange for the release of Palestinian abductees. Give us your overall views on these talks. Is Netanyahu, in your opinion, a main obstacle to any ceasefire agreement, as it may mean the end of his political career?
Thank you for having me. Indeed, Benjamin Netanyahu is the main obstacle with his government, of course, because he is confronted with a coalition of ministers of the far right wing, like the security minister Ben-Gvir and the finance minister Smotrich, who threatened him to pull out of the coalition and resign if he stops the war. On the other hand, he is confronted with the small war cabinet, Benny Gantz and Gabi Eisenkot, who are telling him that the priority should go to release the prisoners and to accept an exchange of prisoners with the Palestinian resistance. Of course, the Israeli society is made of warmongers. They all agree on continuing the war. However, we see as a very significant failure of the Israeli occupation forces in Gaza, in the north, in the middle, in the south, in Khan Yunis, in Hamad City. They go back to Beit Hanun in the north. They go back to Ashat again on the west. And they're not managing because the Palestinian resistance is harassing and killing the Israeli officers and soldiers. And that comes from the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, who confessed that they are paying a heavy price. So how he's going to go and conduct further operation in Rafah instead of sitting around the table and negotiate a ceasefire if he is not managing to occupy and control Gaza? This is the dilemma he's facing, but because of the support of the society for the war, he is finding strength in comparison to the pressure that he is subjected to by the Americans, by the Europeans, by the Congress, by the American administration, and by the population around the world. So for him, it's a decision either to step down and resign and accept his failure, or to continue the war without achieving any strategic objective.
Mr. Ahmad Mayed, Israel is bombing areas of Gaza that it had designated as being safe, wiping out entire families. And now, in a recent statement from the Israeli Prime Minister's office, Netanyahu has apparently approved plans for the military operation in Rafah. That's the southern Gaza city where more than a million people are sheltering. How far will this clear intent to destroy Gaza continue as the world looks on?
I think with the blanket support of the United States, even at the expense of Joe Biden's election campaign and the possibility of him not being reelected for his unconditional support for the genocidal state of Israel, the Israeli administration will continue to massacre the Palestinian people. The only reason why there's been a dragging of the feet, so to say, with regards to the operation in Rafah was because of two things. One, it required planning, and more importantly, they were very concerned about what would happen during Ramadan. The major concern for the Israeli military establishment was the West Bank and the Arab population within Israel proper. The statements by Netanyahu, the statements by Itamar Ben-Gvir, the statements by Bezalel Smotrich were inflammatory, and they were extremely concerned about a flare-up within the Palestinian territories as well as within the Arab populations within Israel proper. And now that we have crossed into the holy month of Ramadan, Israel believes that they have no other options and they cannot continue to delay indefinitely, and they have to move on Rafah. Rafah has been pinned as the key to the success of Israel. We all know that Israel has not succeeded in any of its domains. We see continuous attacks in Gaza City. There's fighting, severe fighting in Khan Yunis. There was even attacks in Beit Hanun, and Beit Hanun was one of the first areas that saw conflict when Israel invaded on the ground invasion. So Israel has no dominance on the ground. It is losing its air superiority as well. We're consistently hearing of anti-aircraft weaponry being fired as well as drones being captured by the resistance. And the move on Rafah is merely to extend Netanyahu's political life. And that is why he's also jostling for a fight within the north. And Hezbollah has responded quite heavily with regards to that. And I think that we might be heading for an escalation if Israel continues on this trajectory.
Mr. Magni, global condemnations have been pouring in over Israel's massacre of over 100 Palestinians who were waiting for humanitarian aid in Gaza City on Thursday. Israel has made a habit now of slaughtering those seeking aid in Gaza over the past several weeks. Now, impeding aid and starving Gazans is one part of the collective punishment, but murdering in cold blood people seeking aid, that definitely fits in the bracket of genocide, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Not only that, it's a crime against humanity, war crimes, and should be brought in front of the International Criminal Court, not the International Court of Justice. Secondly, it is the Israeli occupation forces are demonstrating that their strength is only manifested in killing civilians, in targeting women and children, and in starving the population in Gaza to put pressure on the Palestinian resistance because they are failing to confront the Palestinian resistance. However, the world condemnation really reached to no conclusion, really, and nothing concrete, because we cannot accept that the Americans are condemning the killing of more than 30,000 civilians in Gaza, acknowledging it for the first time by Joe Biden himself, and then insisting on sending weapons to the Israelis to continue killing the Palestinians. Secondly, to say that Israel has a right to defend itself, even yesterday by the White House, it's a total mockery, because Israel is not defending itself. Israel is killing civilians and starving the population in Gaza. So the multiple ethnic cleansing by pushing more than 700,000 Palestinians from the north to the south, and then from the south to Rafah, and displacing them to non-secure area as an occupation force, is again an ethnic cleansing that Israel is responsible of. Now, the mere fact that the International Court of Justice accepted the case of intent genocide is because there is a strong ground for it. And we have heard how the deliberation of all the lawyers in this case, and we're all quoting the United Nations resolution. Now, the United Nations is calling for the cessation of the ceasefire and for the murdering of the civilians. But Israel seems giving no attention to any country around the world, and asking the world not to lecture the Israelis for their doing, promoting the killing of children because they will be the fighter that they will fight them in the future, promoting the killing of women that they will be pregnant and carrying the children who are going to fight Israel. So you can't have more criminal mind than the Israeli mind.
Mr. Ahmed Mayet, the U.S., it wants to establish a port to deliver humanitarian assistance in Gaza, but at the same time, it provides weapons and lethal arsenal to the Israelis. Please break down this appalling hypocrisy by the U.S. Mr. Mohammed Al-Hindi, he's the Deputy Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad Movement, which we spoke to earlier here on Press TV. He called this as an act of sheer hypocrisy, and that the U.S. is attempting to mislead the international conscience and buying time for Israel. Do you see it in that light as well?
Most definitely. There's no other interpretation with regards to this. If we look at the plan to establish the port of the coast of Gaza, this is an Israeli plan. There are numerous entrance points into Gaza which Israel controls, and Israel had been instructed by the ICJ to ensure that humanitarian aid entered into Gaza. The problem that is present before us is not one of allowing aid in. It's a political problem within Israel. And this was not admitted in other publications, but it was admitted in the INSS annual conference. This happened about a week ago, where they indicated that there's a split within the government. The war cabinet allows for the humanitarian aid to go in. Then you have the extreme right-wing individuals, we've already mentioned their names, starting to produce opposition to that and organizing protesters to prevent trucks from going in. So what do? They move to this concept of dropping humanitarian aid by airdrops. Most of the aid that we have seen has forced Palestinians to fight over the aid, having to go down the path of survival of the fittest. This has another political function and also a military function, because they're trying to bypass UNRWA. If we look at the statements in a recent interview given by Major General Uzi Dayan, Reserve Uzi Dayan, he said that they need to destroy UNRWA because of the refugee issue. And one simple way to do that is to take away the distribution of humanitarian aid as a function of this organization. That is also one of the primary issues with regards to the sport. So when we look at what is happening, it's no act of benevolence on the part of the United States, Israel, or any other country that has participated in this. It is part and parcel of a plan to try and establish Israel as the supreme power within the region, within Gaza, and to ensure that Hamas and UNRWA is destroyed. This is the weaponization of humanitarian aid. If they wanted to allow humanitarian aid in, it's very simple. Allow the streamlining of the checks, allow for the trucks to get in, and the handful of protesters should be moved away from the borders by Israel. It's as simple as that. These are all machinations to push an agenda, and it's simply the principle of war, negotiate while advancing. That's exactly what they are doing right now.
Elijah Magni, in an exclusive interview that we had with the deputy leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, we discussed the Palestinian resistance in Gaza. Mr. Mohammed Al-Hindi said the resistance is carrying out operations in areas which Israel actually claims to have captured, including in the north of the Strip and also in Khan Yunis to the south. Now, after over 5 months of lethal and deadly attacks, the resistance groups are fighting back strong both inside and outside of Gaza. This is surely a serious failure for the Israeli murdering machine, especially in the eyes of the Israeli public.
The 7th of October and 5 months after that date, it is now pretty obvious of the capability of the Israeli army, to the point that many American generals are mocking the Israeli army and the time they are taking for trying to occupy 364 square kilometers in Gaza. So we see the Israeli army since 29th of October last year saying we have control the north. And then we hear just a few days ago that the Israeli army is bombarding Beit Lahia in the north, and then they're pushing the army into Beit Hanun, and then they conducting operation in the north, and then they say we are attacking Khan Yunis, we're destroying the Palestinian resistance, but then today they pulled out of Hamad City, northwest of Khan Yunis, and then they return to it, and then they pull out, and they're struggling all the time because they are facing people, resistance, owner of the land, who are determined to offer their life to defeat the oppressor and this occupation force. And they're not managing because they are not the owner of the land. The only thing they are trying to do is to kill as many civilians as possible, among these, the families of the fighters and the resistance, so they can demoralize the resistance. But it's not working, because at the end of the day, during the negotiation of the ceasefire, the upper hand is given to the resistance inside Gaza that is dictating the terms and rejecting any ceasefire in exchange of no commitment of the Israeli to pull out from Gaza, to withdraw the army, to allow the return of the refugees. That is a position of strength. It is not a position of people who have been under bombardment for the last 5.5 months and who, according to the Israeli wrong thinking, they are suffering defeat. On the contrary, it is the Israeli army that is screaming. It is the Israeli army that is demoralized. The Israeli defense ministers are saying we are paying a very heavy price, not the resistance. The resistance is working quietly, and we see the result on the ground by the failure of the Israeli army not only not to achieve and fail to achieve the objectives of defeating Hamas and release all the prisoners, but not capable of controlling any area that the army went into, right, in the north, and Khan Yunis.
Mr. Ahmad Mayed, the Yemeni army says it has carried out fresh attacks on U.S. and Israeli vessels in the Indian Ocean and is expanding the scope of its pro-Palestinian and retaliatory operations. Talk to us about the Yemeni response to the Gaza onslaught and the defiant message that the Yemenis have been sending to the U.S. and its allies.
The ally of the Palestinian people has clearly been the brothers of Yemen, and there in the north, the brothers of Hezbollah. We have seen promises from the leadership of the resistance axis to ensure that there is an escalation, particularly during this holy month. And the Yemeni brothers have stepped forward and fulfilled their promise in this regard. What is very interesting is that ships had been routed around the Cape of Good Hope here in South Africa. And the South African port had been abandoned for a long time because of the excessive distance that they would have to travel, and the Suez Canal shortens this. However, the fact that the Yemenis have already targeted certain ships, I believe it's the USS Laboon and three other vessels that were heading towards the Cape of Good Hope, is an indication that the entire blockade will tighten around Israel. This will exacerbate the already critical economic and fragile situation within Israel. Israel is sitting with a huge problem right now. Their reservists had to be released back into civil life simply because the economy is suffering. They are extremely exhausted. They cannot continue with the fighting at the pace that they did at the very beginning. And that is why you see this limited incursions. That is why you see the bombing of individuals whilst they obtain aid. These are gutted tactics by the Israeli regime. The Yemenis, however, have shown a very principled position that despite the international pressure, despite the consistent, almost daily bombings by the US and the UK coalitions of Yemen, they continue to remain firm and fixed on their commitment to the Palestinian people. I believe we will see further capabilities of the resistance in Yemen. We have already seen new weapon systems being rolled out that have shocked the Americans, that have shocked the Israelis, and have shocked the United Kingdom. And I believe we will see entrances of other individuals and other actors within a very short space of time, especially considering the expansion of this particular operation and war now.
Elijah Magnier, why aren't regional blocs or even Arab governments stepping up and taking matters into their own hands? Many officials have called on Muslim and Arab countries to openly express their opposition to the Israeli regime and sever ties with the Israelis. Why is that not happening?
Well, we have seen two countries like Qatar supporting the negotiation and Egypt really closing Rafah. That was a very important step not to accommodate the Israeli plan to create another Nakba, the Palestinian, and displaced 1.5 million Palestinians from Gaza. But on the other hand, we have seen Jordan and the Emirates doing a great job in facilitating the passage of fruit and vegetable to the Israelis through their land, shamelessly providing all the support that Israel needs while simultaneously going on the media and complaining about the victims and the murders of the Palestinians in Gaza. So you cannot be the second largest producer of fruit and vegetables to Israel, that is, i.e. Jordan, because the first is Turkey, and then complain about how the Israelis are starving the population, and then offering a land support. Basically, because the Arabs want to give up on the Palestinian cause. They don't want to hear it because it embarrasses them with all the normalization that they are in process or others they have already achieved. And this is something that they cannot face the people in the Middle East and around the world that are more powerful than the Middle Eastern countries in standing with a just cause, i.e. the Palestinian cause. And that is quite embarrassing when we see all the Arab countries who have the potentiality to put an end to the Israeli arrogance and killing and stop Israel, particularly those who have borders with Israel, and impose the break of the siege like the Yemen Ansarullah are admirably doing, and carrying the honor of the world population, imposing humanitarian law on the Israeli by preventing their shipment. But on the other hand, unfortunately, we see all the sacrifices of the Yemeni are wasted by countries, Arab countries, who are offering the land road to supply the Israelis with fruit and vegetable. So this contradiction that we see between the language used by the Islamic country and many Middle Eastern countries, and at the same time, they pretend to be more concerned when they're not lifting a finger, and they are they have no sensibility to the image of the children and the women begging in the street for food and killed in the street, cut in pieces by the murderer of the Israeli. Israel would have never dared to such an act had the Arabs been united.
Very well. We're going to have to leave it there. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier joining us from Brussels, and attorney, activist, and political analyst Zakir Ahmad Mayet from Johannesburg. Gentlemen, thank you for contributing to our program, and thanks for staying with us on Spotlight. Bye-bye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page will welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Shaykh Rouhani, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of Saum or fasting and why the Muslims are obliged to fast for 1 month. In fact, is it mentioned in the Holy Quran or not? We know that in the other religions before Islam, we have the concept of fasting, but it is not continuous for 30 days right after each other. But in Islam, we are obliged to have 30 days, 30 continuous days of fasting. What is the main reason?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, fasting in the holy month of Ramadan is mentioned explicitly in the Holy Quran, as it is said, شَهْرُ رَمَضَانَ الَّذِي أُنزِلَ فِيهُ الْقُرْآنِ هُدًى لِلنَّاسِ وَبَيِّنَاتٍ مِّنَ الْهُدَى وَالْفُرْقَانِ. From this part, فَمَنْ شَهِدَ مِنْكُمُ الشَّهْرَ فَلْيَصُمْهُ, says the one who sees or who is present in this shahr, a shahr, in this holy month, فَلْيَصُمْهُ, they have to fast. Yes. So it is explicitly mentioned in the Holy Quran that in fasting is obligatory.